Hear ye, hear ye. This Honorable Appellate Court for the 2nd Judicial District is now back in session. The Honorable Mary S. Costa presiding.
Good morning. You can sit down, John.
Your Honor, the second case of the docket this morning is 2-25-0335. Terry Stout, plaintiff appellant, the Costco Wholesale Corporation, defendant appellant. Arguing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Patrick Anderson. Arguing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Michael Reeses.
Good morning. Mr. Anderson, are you prepared?
Yes.
To proceed.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Your Honors, Counsel, my name is Patrick Anderson. I am here today with Bob Napleton. We represent the plaintiff, Terry Stout. We're asking this Court to reverse the decision of the trial court to grant summary judgment in defendant Costco's favor based on the open and obvious doctrine. Now, in every part of this case, the obviousness, the distraction exception, the deliberate encounter, and the traditional duty factors, Costco tries to shift the focus onto what the plaintiff, Terry Stout, did. But Illinois law maintains the focus on the landowner when it comes to duty. So the focus in this case should be on what Costco should expect and anticipate. And once that focus is put back where it belongs...
What created the obstacle in this case?
A combination of factors. The first is that this gas station doesn't have a typical gas hose configuration to begin with. At most gas stations, a driver has to pull in and align the side of their vehicle with the gas tank to the pump. Costco, in this case, chose to use extra-long gas hoses that employed a retractable pump that allowed customers to pump from either side so that traffic could move faster, so that more cars could get in and out of there. And so the condition in this case was caused, first of all, by the extra-long hose that would be against the expectations of a typical user. And secondly...
How extra-long was this hose?
The testimony varies on that, whether it's above or below 18 feet. But I believe the testimony is all consistent that it is longer than a typical gas station hose that doesn't have this retractable mechanism.
What's typical? I think you said in your reply brief that the distance between the ground or the whatever the platform is below the hose is going to vary depending upon how close the vehicle gets to the pump, right?
That's true.
So it's going to be a little lower if you're really close to the pump, or a little bit higher if you're further away from the pump.
Correct, but this low-lying loop in this particular case was not necessarily created only by the plaintiff's distance that they chose to part from the pump. The evidence is that the retractor mechanism was malfunctioning. Plaintiff testified she tried to retract it and it did not work. There's also evidence down on the video that it's hanging low to the ground. The testimony is from the defendant's own witnesses, Cook, the gas station attendant, that is, if this retractor mechanism were functioning properly, the hose would hang at about waist height near the gas tank itself.
But wait a minute. If the hose were hanging waist high, that would have been even harder for her to get over it.
Correct. And so the condition that defendants created actually invited the action the plaintiff engaged in that they now complain of and say is contributory negligence. Plaintiff herself testified that if the hose was at a normal height, that if it was waist height, she likely would not have attempted to step over it.
She would have gone around the other side to tell her husband that she was saving him money.
Potentially, but she would have. I mean, that wasn't the only reason that she chose that route, and I can get into that later. But she and the defendants in their briefs acknowledged that if the hose was at a normal height, it would have been a limitation on people attempting to step over it. So that's the issue in the case, that this was an abnormally low-lying hose because of the combination of...
I looked at the record. Is there any standard, code? The administrative code doesn't require the hose to be a certain distance from the ground?
No, and a violation of a code isn't required for negligence.
So whatever the condition was, when she got there, that hose, that is the hose that she used to pump the gas. And she said, her testimony is, I saw the hose. I saw the hose.
Yes.
And she stepped over it and tripped.
Yeah, but seeing the hose and appreciating its risks are two different things. As she said, she believed that she could step over the hose without tripping it. And that, in fact, shows a misjudgment, which shows that she didn't actually appreciate the full risk of this. Because what she appreciated was a hose that she would be able to step over, not one that the variable length would get caught. And what we're talking about, the fact that this hose was low-lying to begin with is part of what invited the action in her stepping over it. And under Illinois law, both the condition and the risk must be apparent to a reasonable person in plaintiff's position. Here, the condition that a hose exists isn't the issue. The risks that were created by it being low-lying, inviting the action of stepping over it, the risk that it was a low-lying, you know, dynamic loop that moves, that was not appreciable to a reasonable person in plaintiff's position. And the risk presented by it being low-lying because of the malfunctioning retractor was not a condition that a reasonable person in plaintiff's position would anticipate. And so for a number of reasons, this does not fit both requirements under Illinois law for a open and obvious condition.
What constituted the distraction?
There were four identified distractions. And all of them were foreseeable distractions that were inherent to a self-service gas station. Especially in the Midwest, where inclement weather is common. The first was the rain and the weather conditions. The plaintiff testified she was trying to avoid getting wet. That is a foreseeable distraction to a self-service gas station owner in the Midwest. I was going to move on to the other distracting events and conditions. The other distraction was talking to her husband about the price of gas. And that should be reasonably foreseeable, again, to a self-service gas station owner.
How is that reasonably foreseeable?
Because as a gas station owner, they should anticipate, who sets the prices, they should anticipate that patrons would be considering the pricing as they are attempting to make their purchase or purchasing fuel from them and deciding what grade of fuel to use and deciding those things. It is an incident of pumping gas, of this Costco's business. And so it's reasonably foreseeable that people would be thinking about the price of gas as they're going to purchase gas. The third distraction is not wanting to leave a running gas pump unattended, which the defendant cites legal prohibitions against doing so. And because defendant is well aware of those legal prohibitions, they should anticipate that the plaintiff would not, that a person in plaintiff's position would not want to leave a gas nozzle, a running gas pump unattended, as plaintiff would have been required to do if she had been walking around the other side of the
car. Isn't anybody stepping over a gas pump hose, isn't that dangerous regardless of what height it is?
Potentially, but that's a jury question. The dangerous of the condition is
not necessarily a jury question. Whether or not a danger is open and obvious is also a question of law.
Only when there's no dispute as to how it may be perceived.
There's no dispute as to what the hose was and what plaintiff did. She does not dispute that she stepped over the hose. And you can see in the video the hose swinging after she trips.
Mm-hmm.
So the hose was not on the ground. It was above the ground.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And anybody who takes that risk, that's a substantial risk. I don't know, have you ever worked in a gas station?
I've not.
You worked in a gas station?
Yes, I did.
Geez, there are nothing you haven't done?
So but the point is, and I agree with you, it is a substantial risk, but it's a substantial risk that defendants should be aware of. Whether or not,
but
plain is obvious.
That's the purpose of the open and obvious rule.
Mm-hmm.
That so, you don't have to guard against it because the risk is minimized by the open and obvious condition that the plaintiff's encountering.
Right, unless there is something foreseeable to defendants that makes it less likely that a plaintiff will do that.
What's that foreseeable, that fourth foreseeable distraction?
Actually pumping the gas. As the trial court pointed out, that her hand was physically on the pump as she was still attempting this step-over maneuver. And I want to address her act of stepping over. That's a contributory negligence argument, which is for the jury. Defendants didn't move for summary judgment on contributory negligence. That is an issue of fact for the jury. The focus is not on plaintiff's subjective actions, but what is reasonably foreseeable for Costco to expect of its customers. The fact that she stepped over the hose, there's testimony in here that customers stepped over the hoses every day. That's evidence that shows this was foreseeable to the defendants. If they knew that customers attempted to step over these hoses, then the risk of tripping should have been reasonably apparent to them.
So you have to get past the open and obvious before you get to the issue of can trip, right?
Well, I mean, I think they're separate issues completely, for sure. I think either there's a question of fact as to the perception of this condition and its risk. And so for that reason, the condition's not open and obvious. But even if it were, the distraction exception and deliberate encounter exceptions apply. And separately, the contributory negligence issue is a separate issue. It is a separate issue entirely.
The distraction exception.
But doesn't duty, I mean, where does duty come in there?
The duty analysis is the focus remains on the defendant and what a defendant can reasonably anticipate out of its customers. And here, it's reasonably foreseeable. Defendant admits that customers step over these hoses all the time. They admit that they know that malfunctions happen with the retractor. They train their employees to fix them. So this is something that they could reasonably anticipate.
Well, I know Justice Burkett was going to ask a question.
Yeah, just to go back, you just mentioned the distraction exception again, which generally involves another danger external to the plaintiff that caused the plaintiff to divide her attention. So it's, you say it was because she wanted to have a conversation with her husband about the price.
Mm-hmm.
She creates that, right?
Not necessarily. The price is set by the defendants. And more to the point, the self-created distraction line of cases, I guess, those provide that a self-created distraction doesn't invoke the distraction exception only when that self-created distraction is not foreseeable to the defendant. We cited a number of cases in our briefs where there were arguably self-created distractions that, based on the remainder of the traditional duty analysis, were still foreseeable to the defendants. And so that's the point here, is all of this focus on the plaintiff's actions, all of this focus on the subjective knowledge misplaces the focus. This is a duty case. Open and obvious goes to duty. And the focus of the duty analysis is always on the defendant. Same with the distraction exception. The defendant doesn't need to anticipate the exact nature of the distraction, just that patrons would become distracted in some way. Either by the weather, that's foreseeable. Over discussion of gas prices, that's foreseeable. And then just one point going back to the alternative pathway. The alternative in this case wasn't risk-free. The alternative also involved going out in the rain, potentially to a slippery surface. The alternative involved leaving a running gas pump unattended while going to the other side of the car.
So you're saying that you can't put the gas pump in, get it to go, and go sit in your car and wait?
I'm not saying that. That is one way that the regulations could be interpreted.
They don't say you can't do that. You're not supposed to sit in your car with the car running.
Right.
Well, no, not the car running.
Okay.
The car off. You put the gas thing in, you let it.
I guess that would be a matter.
See where I'm going here?
I'm sorry.
That's what I do.
I guess that would be a matter of interpretation as to whether that is leaving a gas pump unattended, so to speak, right?
Right.
But we've all been to gas stations where we see the signs that say don't leave this gas pump unattended. And so defendant can't deny that they have knowledge that this is a foreseeable thing for them. They anticipate and expect and direct customers not to leave the gas pump running unattended. And so to say that it's not foreseeable to him misplaces the focus. The focus has to remain on what remains foreseeable. And these are all foreseeable things that defendants as a gas station operator should anticipate their customers may do.
Can I ask you this? You did some research. Did you find any gas station pump cases involving tripping over hoses?
I didn't find anything that fit the facts of this case, particularly not with the unique configuration of the hose and the malfunction of the retractor. I think those are two cases that even if there were other gas station cases would distinguish our facts.
I couldn't find any place.
I couldn't either.
Because why? What do you think?
I don't know. That's a good question. I can't speculate.
Because a gas hose is open and obvious when you're pumping gas?
No. I don't. In this particular set of facts, both the condition and the risk were not open and obvious. The case isn't about a gas pump existing. A case is about the other aspects that we've talked about this that make this a unique situation and one customers would not anticipate. So across every part of the analysis, the focus is misplaced on plaintiff when it should be on what is reasonably foreseeable to the defendant. Costco had every reason to expect that patrons would fail to appreciate the risk of a low-lying hose caused by a malfunctioning retractor. They should not have been relieved of their duty as a matter of law. On this record, a reasonable jury could find for the plaintiff. And so we ask this court to reverse the decision to grant summary judgment and allow this case to be decided by a jury.
The evidence in the record was that the pump was checked in the morning at 6:15 and checked again after the accident, and the pump was operating properly.
Well, that's not all the testimony there is. There's testimony from Costco employees that said we could have missed this during our walk around. There's testimony from plaintiff that it was not retracting properly. There's testimony that if it did retract properly, it would have been to waist height, and video evidence shows it clearly wasn't. So there is evidence that it was not functioning properly.
Justice
Mullen,
you had a question.
I was answered by, provoked by other justices. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Anderson.
Thank you. You'll have an opportunity for rebuttal, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Reeses.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike Reeses, and I'm here today on behalf of Defendant Appellee Costco. And I'll go right to Justice Burkett's question. I couldn't find a case either involving a gas pump hose, a trip, and open and obvious. So we can maybe make a safe assumption this might be the first case. We submit the trial court was right in granting summary judgment, and we ask this court to affirm. First, the evidence showed that the gas pump hose was an open and obvious condition that a reasonable person could see and avoid. As Justice Burkett made the observation during the argument, plaintiff had no trouble seeing it, to quote her testimony, quote, I saw it, period, I stepped over it, period, close quote. It wasn't a case where she got tangled up in the hose while in the process of fueling. Rather, she thought that the hose was low enough to step over, knowingly tried to step over it with her right foot, and fell when her trailing foot caught on the hose. Plaintiff testified that the color video depicted the hose the way it looked to her when she thought it was low enough to step over. The appearance of the hose, as depicted in the video, is well documented, it's in the record, and it's not subject to reasonable dispute. Now, opposing counsel would say that the focus has to be on the landowner and what the landowner knew. But when we're talking about open and obvious, and I'm grateful that counsel did refer to it during his argument. I'm grateful that counsel referred to it during his argument, that the condition and risk are apparent to a reasonable person exercising ordinary intelligence, perception, and judgment. The law holds the plaintiff to the reasonable person standard. Plaintiff never argued that the judging of the height of the hose would have been difficult because she was looking down at it. Indeed, she never testified where she was looking when she stepped over the hose.
Well, didn't she state that she was attempting not to get her pants dirty or something to that effect?
I thought she said that because, so there's an overhang, okay, to protect when you're fueling. But there was rain dripping, and I thought what she was saying was she was concerned about the rain dripping on her pants. She might have said something like that.
She wanted to avoid touching the hose that was wet.
Correct. Right, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
If a customer before a plaintiff had used a retractor hose and it didn't pull the hose all the way back in,
right,
would that in any way change the analysis here?
No. It would not change it. I am focusing on the open and obvious. Now, you know, the first round of our motion dealt with the issue of we didn't owe a duty if there was nothing wrong with their retractable device and if we didn't have notice, actual or constructive of it. I really focused on the open and obvious because, to me, this is just a clear case of open and obvious based on what she saw, what she said, and what the video shows.
And I think that they might, plaintiff might argue it wasn't open and obvious, but in the event that it was open and obvious, they talk about the distraction.
Yes.
They cite several cases regarding the distraction.
Yes.
Can you distinguish?
Oh, absolutely. So, first of all, when we're talking about a distraction, it's recognized in a limited form. Emphasis on the word limited. In Bruins versus City of Springfield, a 2014 Illinois Supreme Court decision, the court noted that the mere possibility that someone might be distracted does not mean that a particular condition is reasonably foreseeable in the legal sense. The distraction exception does not apply, as I think it's already been referred to in the argument, by distractions that are self-created. What are we talking about?
The distraction has to be reasonably foreseeable.
Yes, and most importantly, it has to really be specific to the premises. So what does that mean? That means in a case like Deber involving construction, when the plaintiff is distracted and steps into a hole, he's distracted because his co-workers above him are dumping construction debris out of a window or from an elevated height, okay? That's a classic distraction. It's not a distraction if in your mind you're saying, I want to talk to my husband about the price of gas, and these days, you know, the price of gas is maybe a subject of conversation. Even so, that is self-created. What's another self-created distraction? Or another instance where you don't have a distraction? It's in our brief, Negron, Negron, N-E-G-R-O-N. There the plaintiff was distracted by a loud noise in the neighborhood. On a public sidewalk, loud noise. Is that a distraction? No, it's beyond our control. There's not just one rain cloud. There's nothing we're doing, and there's one rain cloud directly above the gas station. It's just part of the environment. Just like a loud noise in a neighborhood is part of the environment. That is not a distraction that we should have to foresee and somehow guard against. How would you guard against that? It's a question that I'm sure counsel will answer in his rebuttal.
How about counsel's public policy argument?
I'm not sure if I really heard his public policy argument.
I'm talking about in his brief.
Oh, in terms of trying to avoid, well, you know, that is a very laudable goal. And it's one that, you know, we all agree with. But the issue here, when you look at those statistics, and he cites statistics, those statistics don't really involve falls off the premises. A lot of the statistics involve falls in the home. I think it was about 75% of the statistics involve falls in the home, or they're falls relating to a health condition, getting dizzy or fainting. It's not involving gas stations or, forget gas stations, commercial property in general.
Is it appropriate for us to even consider public policy? We're an intermediate court. We don't create policy.
Well, that's, of course, that is another argument. We look at the administrative code, the regulations. They allow self-serve gas stations. That's a public policy, too. And that policy, I think, clearly exists and recognizes that while the activity may be regulated, The customer can serve his own gas or her own gas. And one thing that it hasn't been mentioned during the argument today, and I'm glad that we've had a chance to go into some of the facts, but when we're talking about, you know, the issue about how could she get back to her car, right, when she was fueling up? Well, the easiest way to do it would have been if she simply had positioned herself so that the hose wasn't between her and the vehicle, but rather if she was standing on the other side of the hose while fueling up, she doesn't even have to step over anything. She gets to decide where she stands. That isn't an issue of comparative negligence. Unless we owe her a duty, we never get to the issue of comparing fault. So again, another consideration that supports the trial court ruling in this case.
What about the fact that the employees testified that it was not unusual to see other patrons walking over and stepping over the hoses?
You know, people do that, right? I mean, let's face it, I would have to say anyone who's worked in a gas station probably has seen that. Anyone who pumps gas probably saw it but made no mental note of it at the time. But what is foreseeability? Foreseeability exists in two forms. One is logical, the other is legal. Logical foreseeability, or sometimes I think it's called simple foreseeability, is not based on the reasonable person standard. It is simply based on a description of what happens in the world, what people do, how they behave.
Yeah, not a foreseeable self-created distraction.
Right, whereas legal foreseeability is based on a reasonable person standard and based on what the law assumes. So, yes, Justice Burkett, it's absolutely foreseeable in the simple, logical sense that somebody could trip stepping over a hose. That does not create a duty. Foreseeability alone never creates a duty. It's based on the balance of the factors that make up the traditional duty analysis.
The industry is highly regulated. But there's no regulation regarding the height of the gas pump hose from the ground or from the island.
Correct.
So there's no regulation, right?
Correct.
The trial court fail to do a duty analysis? And if it did, then does it matter here?
So, Justice Mullen, great question. And I'll say right up front, the court, while it focused on open and obvious, did not balance all of the factors. However, as a reviewing court, what do you review? You review judgments. You don't review reasoning. This is de novo review. You can make the analysis balancing the factors and reaching the same result as the trial court. It's not a case where if the trial court got everything right but then didn't dot the I and cross the T, you got to send it back for the court to do the analysis. You review the reasoning, you review the result, not the reasoning, and you can affirm based on the result that the court reached. I will address that very quickly, though. When we're talking about the traditional duty analysis, when the condition is open and obvious, two of the factors, foreseeability and likelihood of injury, will be slight, weighing against the imposition of a duty because the open and obvious nature of the condition is sufficient warning. There are two other factors, of course, magnitude and consequence of the burden of guarding against injury. And in this case, that would be far-reaching. It would require self-serve stations to post additional attendance on sentry duty. I think I heard that suggested by opposing counsel during this argument, to monitor customers while they gas up. It would change the very nature of a self-serve station. Actually, the regulations, I believe, only require one attendant on duty. We have more than one attendant on duty. If people do need help, we have attendants available to assist them. But Illinois laws made the public policy choice of allowing self-serve stations in nearly every state by regulating their operation. The recognition of a duty here, as argued by plaintiff, would be unjustified, given that plaintiff had multiple reasonable alternative paths. She could have simply stood on the other side of the hose, and the risk was open and obvious. Plaintiff faults the trial court's analysis. The short answer, though, again, is under de novo standard review, the court receives and reviews the judgment, not its reasoning. Plaintiff's criticism is not well-founded. The court's reasoning was correct. The risk of tripping over the hose was open and obvious. She had to see it to step over it. The distraction exception did not apply, and plaintiff had a reasonable alternative path back to the truck. Using the objective reasonable person standard, the court correctly applied the law in granting summary judgment based on the open and obvious nature of the gas pump hose, the self-created nature of plaintiff's alleged distraction, and the existence of a safe path back to her vehicle. If I may simply close
also,
yes.
Also argue the deliberate encounter exception.
Not argued below, waived, maybe we want to consider it. There's no economic compulsion here. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't apply when you have that reasonably safe alternative path, which we had. If I can just close on a personal note, I've not been out here to argue in front of the Second District since the pandemic, and I just want to say that I'm reminded that it's always good to appear in the Second District. Thank you, and we ask you to affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson.
I just want to start with the alternative pathway argument. Lefevre makes clear that the availability of an alternative pathway does not preclude the deliberate encounter exception, and nor is economic incentive required. Lefevre specifically speaks to it. Our Supreme Court said those aren't requirements, that the focus remains on what's foreseeable to the defendant.
Did the deliberate encounter exception, was that raised at the trial court?
So the trial court...
The trial court never addressed it.
Well, the trial court did in a way to specifically address the alternative pathway argument, and that only arises in the deliberate encounter exception. There's no discussion of alternative pathway if deliberate encounter doesn't come up. So it was addressed somehow and ruled specifically on by the trial court. Mm-hmm. Defendant asks a question about how they could possibly guard against this injury, and that goes to the portions of the duty analysis the trial court did not analyze, and we cited a number of cases that state even if it's open and obvious, that analysis is required. So it is required. And I would state that while this court does have de novo review, that this isn't a court of first view, it's a court of review, and that the trial court should be the one to properly make that decision in the first instance. But in any event, with the magnitude of the burden,
well, this is kind of comes to us on summary judgment.
Correct. Yes, yeah, I acknowledge the de novo standard, Your Honors. I understand. But as to the burden, I think the defendant is overstating the burden. There's hardly any burden. The burden is not to prevent customers from doing something or not doing something. The burden would be to prevent their hoses from malfunctioning, making sure the retractors work correctly, or at the very least, posting a warning. They say, we know these people step over hoses all the time. Post a warning. In Lefevre, again...
Are you asking us to assume that the retractor was not operating properly?
No, I'm asking you to find that that's a disputed question of fact. We cited evidence that it was not functioning properly, that it was malfunctioning. Defendant cited evidence that disputes that, that conflicts with that.
And
that's a jury question.
I go back to what I asked earlier. What difference does it make? Because the condition is the condition that existed when she pulled up and started pumping gas and decided to walk over the hose.
Right, but exactly what was going through her mind and her subjective beliefs are not the focus. The focus is on whether a defendant should reasonably anticipate that a customer would attempt to step over a low-lying hose, misjudge it, especially when the hose is malfunctioning and in this long-lying loop configuration.
As counsel pointed out, the duty analysis looks at what is reasonably foreseeable, correct?
Correct.
Not some people, particularly younger people, usually jumping over the hose or walking over the hose when they shouldn't be.
Well, I think the law is clear that the exact nature of the injury, the exact manner in which it occurred, need not be foreseeable. That's, our Supreme Court has said that numerous times, that the exact way it's that the injury occurs need not be foreseeable, as long as foreseeable that some injury could occur. Here, all of these circumstances, defendant's position as a gas station operator, all of that makes it foreseeable to them. We cited the Harris case, and defendant said these things have to be incidental to related to the business. In that case, a patron was coming out of a bank, and the court found that incidents to banking, reviewing receipts, putting away bank documents, looking for your car, were foreseeable distractions to the bank. In the same way here, all of these things we're talking about, being exposed to the rain by pumping gas, pumping the gas itself, discussing gas prices, not leaving the nozzle running, those are all directly related to what she was there for, to purchase gas from the defendant, directly related to their operations. And so, for that reason, the Harris, the analysis there is applicable. These are foreseeable distractions because they're related to the business. The defendant's focusing on plaintiff's positioning before she started pumping gas is, again, misplaced contributory negligence argument. The other point I want to make about the Bruns and Negron cases specifically, those involved municipalities. The entire duty calculus was different. The consequences, the magnitude of the burden, involved municipalities with miles and miles and miles of property to maintain. This is a gas station. This is a private business. This is Costco. There's 12 pumps. This is nowhere near the burden that we're talking about with municipal entities, nowhere near the burden on the taxpayer, and nowhere near the circumstance that we talk about in those cases like Bruns and Negron. And so for all the reasons I discussed today, all the reasons set forth in the brief, we would ask you to reverse the decision to grant summary judgment in favor of the defendant and remand the case for further proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Reeses. Gentlemen, good having you. We will take the case under consideration and render a decision in due course.